Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking to our regular guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection today. Michelle Reinen back with us, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle, good to see you.
Good to see you, Larry.
Laura Sutherland with us as well, back once again. She is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Laura, good to see you as well.
Nice to see you, Larry.
So these two experts are here to talk about a whole bunch of things, but it's October is Cybersecurity Month, so we're certainly going to zero in on that a bit. Talking about preventing security breaches, everyday tips to keep your devices safe, and of course we want to hear from you with those kinds of questions or other consumer scam issues that you have come across. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And here we are, October, Cybersecurity Month, Awareness Month at least. What's the message you want to give to consumers?
Well, the overarching theme this year, as you know, this is an annual campaign for everyone to just focus on encouraging that personal accountability and really proactive behavior and security for best practices in digital privacy. But this year's theme is own it, secure it, and protect it. So things I think we talk about pretty much during every show in one fashion or another as we're covering the different scams. But we want to make sure that people own it, so never click and tell information, staying safe on social media, and that update those privacy settings, you know, that big picture there, keeping tabs on your apps, so best practices for device application. I know during different shows, Laura and I have covered some of the schemes that we've found behind some of the apps over time. And then the big picture behind secure it, shake up your passphrase protocol. So we're always saying change that password long and strong. Know what it is. Create those strong, unique passwords, passphrases, really. Double your login protection. So that two-factor, multi-factor authentication. Shop safely online, knowing where you are, kind of be present online, know where you are, what information you're transmitting, that it is through a secure site. Play hard to get with strangers, so how to spot and avoid phishing attacks there. And then the theme of protect it. If you connect, you must protect. So updating to the latest security software, web browsers, operating systems. I don't think we can remind people enough that they need to be proactive in that area. Stay protected while connected. So Wi-Fi safety, again, being aware, be present with what you're doing. Be very conscious of the clicks that you make. And if you collect it, protect it. So this is more on the side of probably the businesses, but keeping customer consumer data and information safe. So the action consumers can have there is reading the privacy policies, asking the questions, being aware of what information they're handing over for what it is they're getting in return. You know, that can be as simple as the app selection. What are you letting that app connect to within your device? Are you letting it connect to your contacts, to your photos? You control that aspect of the keep it collected.
You can say no for all those little questions that pop up.
You can say, I don't want to be location services. I don't need that, you know, type situation, little things like that.
I just did an app, about a week ago for the phone provider. And, you know, you have to go through. There's like three or four different things. They say, well, can we do this? Can we do that? I just kept saying, no, no, right. no, I didn't see any need for it.
And, right.
But if you click yes, you could be opening yourself up for some.
You can be opening yourself up to handing over all sorts of information that you may not understand. You know, the cost of saying no at the end, if it's a whole series of questions, might be, well, then you don't get to do business with them. I mean, I'm seeing more and more sites that say, we collect cookies. You need to allow us to collect them. And so hit consent. And if you don't hit consent, you're not moving forward. You know, you're not going to be on their site. Well, do I really need what's behind this? And then, you know, clear that out as soon as you can type situation if it's a one-stop shop. But just being very aware is really the baseline that we can walk away with.
I have walked away recently from a couple of those situations where I says, well, you know, you've got to take our cookies if you're going to get our information. I said, well, I'll get some information somewhere else. Right. And that's what I did, Laura.
Good for you.
So what's the what's a good password look like?
Well, so we just said it again, password. I think we need to start thinking of passphrases as opposed to passwords. A combination of words and symbols and numbers and characters that really make up more of a phrase. So I think the one that I don't want people to use, because we use it in our presentation all the time, is I love to rock and roll, you know, type situation. And you take the first letter of that phrase and then you make some, so the I, you know, you can use the exclamation point for I. And then
for the L, make that
a capital L. For the two, love to rock and roll, use the number two, and then a lowercase r, again, and then maybe a question mark at the end. You know, I love to rock and roll, you know, make it more that way, but passphrase. And that one probably isn't long enough for certain passwords if you break it down that long, so you maybe spell out one of the words entirely, but you're really mixing it up. It's not just a word or a combination of words that can be guessed or hacked into through password crackers situation. So really making it more complex. And then add the layer of the two-factor authentication, you know, the something you have versus something you need. So where they're going to text you then when you're trying to log in additional information that you'll enter, or key fobs with your work type situation that you'll plug in. But whenever you can take advantage of that multi-factor authentication, use that with your passphrase.
Joan in Green Bay has a question or an experience to share. Hi, Joan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I saw an ad on TV announcing that Spectrum was going to had an offer for a new phone if you switched or got a new account with them. And I need a new phone, so I called them. And, yes, it was a special offer, and I got this wonderful deal. And then I got several emails from them, like a thank you, a confirmation, the phone is coming today, the Federal Express shipping number, and so on and so forth. And I, you know, so that's at least three or four emails. And then all of a sudden, I got an email that said, additional information needed. We need your government ID, and they suggested a license, and your utility bill from the last month. And I thought, wow, they're really being safe. But, of course, this was the opposite of being safe. And so I'm trying to think, how can I get this information to them, because my scanner's not working right now. So I thought, I know, I'll take pictures on my camera and email it to them. So I did that. Well, the next day, a message comes back saying, your message did not go through. And I thought, oh, darn. So I called Spectrum and with the idea of, well, what's your correct email address? And I didn't get more than two or three sentences out when they said, this is a scam. We hope you didn't send anything in. And I said, well, I did, but fortunately it didn't go through. And he said, you know, we know about the scam and we're trying to fix it, and so on and so forth. And I think the only reason it worked sort of with me is because I'd gotten all these other emails from them telling me the progress of this thing.
Wow. So, Laura.
That's actually really scary, Joanne, and I'm glad that you were able to avoid being taken advantage of, and that Spectrum actually was on top of it and was able to tell you straight away that you were potentially being targeted for a scam. So, and you're right, they're becoming more and more sophisticated. You had engaged with Spectrum. You responded to what was an ad in the newspaper. And that is where we often see scammers try to get a foothold. So when there is a big promotional, oftentimes we see it around the government, like Obamacare, mm-hmm. when that came out, there was a lot of scams around that. Or around Medicare, you see a lot of scams when there's a big promotional item. So in this instance, the promotional item was Spectrum. And you're correct. They used your trusting your communications with Spectrum to get you to send them that extra information. And so what the key flag for you was asking you for something like a utility bill or government information, super unusual for a company to ask for that kind of information. So, and that's really something that people should think about before they give to anybody and make sure they know who they're communicating with. I don't recall how you said you got the request, but some things that we tell people when they're getting a request for information about their personal identifying information or their utility bill or their social security number or anything like that, look at the email. Look for some key indicators that it's a scam. Look for misspellings. Hover your mouse over the URL to see if the URL is actually Spectrum or something else. And then maybe just don't respond. When someone asks for that really kind of personal information to buy a phone, that is where you should take pause and call them yourself on a number that you recognize to determine whether or not you actually should be sending this information. And in this instance, you did exactly that, and Spectrum said it's a scam. So I'm glad to hear that you avoided that, Joanne, and thanks a lot for sharing your story because it's a good one. It shows how sophisticated these hackers and these scammers are getting.
Yeah. And would Joanne be prudent in sort of checking anyway, even if they said they didn't get the information? Michelle, maybe you can chime in.
Yeah, it never hurts with these phishing attacks. And she did try to transmit the information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get the failed message, but sometimes things still go through. I mean, with me, with text all the time, it'll say failed, but yet two of the three people I'm trying to text to still get
the information,
what it is. So
yeah.
Just to be sure, it never hurts to take the steps to monitor your credit report. If she doesn't have a security freeze on, if her social security number was involved in the documents that she needed to provide, be sure that she, you know, either places a security freeze on her credit report or at least does the monitoring so she'll be notified if someone's trying to do some activity using her credit report. And then monitor those government IDs. I mean, she can check on DOT, your driver's license, to see if there's history there. You can check on your utility bill to be sure that that's happening. The bill is accurate. No one's changing those services and things. So it never hurts to be constantly monitoring your information.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Joanne, for calling. Dennis in Two Rivers. Hello.
Hi. I'm just concerned because sometimes I'll take a look at a website that I've been to before, but it just doesn't look quite right. I guess the term is rendered. This doesn't quite render the right way in Microsoft Edge, and it has the HTTPS, and it has the lock. But I wonder, well, how likely it is that scammers could still get the HTTPS and the lock to show up in Microsoft Edge?
Okay.
What you're looking for is to make sure that your URL is typed in accurately for where you want to be. And yes, that will include that HTTPS if you're going to a secure site. But you need to make sure that you're starting at the proper base place of a company's website. So Target, just picking one of those, is Target.com. But you see companies try and take over the websites that are very similar. They may change a letter. So the E in Target, maybe they change that to a 3. because to your eye it might look like an E at a quick look. And if you're just Googling Target and then click a link rather than typing in the URL yourself, you could easily be fooled and not end up at the proper website. So make sure you start at the proper base for a company and then move around within. And some people then bookmark those. I mean, if you're always going to your bank, then you can use your bookmarks or your favorites so you don't have to type it in every time, but you're also not searching for it. You shouldn't be fooled by the imposters who are trying to take over. And you would never then click a link within an email that looks like it's coming from your bank and asking them you to participate in a survey or update your password or, you know, verify some piece of information. And then when you're transmitting data, they'll move you through, okay, you're now giving a credit card, you'll be at the HTTPS portion of the site because you're transmitting secure data. So,
but if Dennis takes his mouse and hovers over the address, it should not say, for example, Target. It'll say something else.
Right. Also, in a phishing email, when you're hovering over things, if you're looking, you'll see where you're really going to, as opposed to what its surface looks like.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling, Dennis. Appreciate your call. Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, our guests today, consumer protection experts from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Dave Potratz, our engineer. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer protection issues today with our two experts, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us. You can join in with your own questions at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. A listener emailed that he's had good luck with the website passwordsgenerator.net. So a way to generate passwords and probably save those passwords so you can retrieve them.
Right. And so you just want to check out that app, understand it, what is its privacy and yes, security behind it. I mean, I'll always be checking.
Yeah, for sure. Jackie in Arena will give you a chance now. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. I love this show. Thank you so much for bringing our attention to all these things. I just wanted to share something that my husband and I do. We have a Gmail account for like social media and general communications with friends and family. But for financial transactions online or over the phone for that matter, we have a separate account that we never use in any public area that actually is from our phone company. And we get absolutely no spam to that. And I just wanted to let people know that, you know, maybe there's a different way of using email. And by keeping this one email address private, we seem so far touching lots of wood. So far, so good.
Hmm. Laura, comment?
Well, I would just agree with that idea. I think that's an excellent methodology to sort of diversify yourself, if you will. Have an email account that you can readily check. And if something does happen, you can shut it down and move on from there. And you don't lose all of your personal contacts with your family and friends. It's an excellent idea and one that I know a lot of people utilize. Some people utilize it for purposes of donating so they can track their donations.
Oh.
It's a really nice idea of like I say, diversifying. And another similar theme is using a credit card to make your purchases rather than a separate credit card, that is, for making your purchases. That way you can follow that particular credit card alone. If there's a problem with any of these scams or you're concerned about it, you can shut it down pretty readily, and it's not going to connect into your banking account or other credit cards. So there's a good way, using these different pockets. It does require a little bit more keeping track of things and more passwords, if you will, but it is another sort of firewall to allow people into your entire privacy and your entire personal identifying information and your networks.
Yeah, makes good sense. Thank you, Jackie, for calling. Appreciate it. Vicki in Mequon, your turn.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about having to submit your Social Security number. My son was apartment hunting in a very competitive California market. He went to an open house, and the person who was holding the open house in the apartment gave him an application and said that he had to send it into this. It was like, it wasn't a post office box, but it was like a commercial post box, and it required him to give his Social Security and driver's license information, and he never heard back from them. And so it just made me, he assumed, well, they rented it to somebody else, but I was a little bit nervous for him having to give Social Security numbers when someone like an apartment developer is, you know, they want to do a credit check on you.
Yeah.
You're kind of vulnerable because they ask for a lot of personal information from a lot of people who might, you know, like in that competitive market, there's a lot of people wanting that apartment.
Yeah.
So, Vicki, I think that's a great question, and you're right to be concerned about that. And what we – so, first of all, it isn't uncommon for landlords and companies renting to solicit Social Security numbers. So it's not necessarily an indication that they wanted to scam your son. Having said that, we discourage people giving their Social Security number until they've actually been selected for the apartment as a way to prevent that. Because in general, if you can avoid giving out your number to another company that has to, your Social Security number to another company that has to house it and keep it safe, you should. And so as a general matter, we ask people, you know, at first inquire, do you need it right now? Can I give you a separate kind of personal identifying information? And then in the case with apartment hunting, you should wait until you've been selected. But in fact, they do often require it for a background check or a credit check, rather.
Yeah. There you go. And sometimes in a competitive market like that, if you're if you don't, they won't bother, and they'll probably take somebody else.
It's possible.
One alternative that I'm just thinking of that is within Wisconsin, if you've had a background check done and you were declined, you get to receive a copy of that. So you would then have that copy to share with the next potential landlord you want to work with, and so could provide that instead of having them run a second check, and then you could potentially redact like the Social Security number off of that report because it's still showing who you are type situation. So, you know, tenants may want to, if they're going to have to be looking in such a competitive space and handing over these applications, may want to run their own if that's a possibility. I mean, ask, check that out, and then that way you're not giving the number, you're just giving the information they're seeking.
And Vicki, thank you very much for calling. Just to go along with that, Andy had emailed to ask how can we get banks to stop using Social Security numbers, or will that ever happen?
I don't think that will ever happen because it's tied to Homeland Security and the credit checks that they need to do and authentication of who you are and, you know, criminal activity and all sorts of things. So I don't foresee that they will ever be in a position to open an account for you without having to provide them the Social Security number.
Bill in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Bill.
I had experience with spoofing caller ID as far as on the receiving end. And one of, at least twice that I'm aware of, a caller ID came up, and lo and behold, it's our home phone number. It's like, oh, I'm calling myself. I'm not talking to that jerk. Anyway, yeah. And then not too long ago, we got this. We have our cable and phone and internet through Spectrum. And so one of the times recently, my wife got a phone call and so it came up with Spectrum. It's like, oh, I better answer that. Well, it turns out that it was a combination of AT&T and DirecTV selling their package and wanting to put a satellite dish on our roof. And, of course, my wife says, no, you're not putting a dish on my brand-new roof, which was steel. Anyway, they led her to believe that Spectrum and AT&T and DirecTV were all combining, and we're going to be forced to put a dish on or near our house. And so I started investigating. I went into the store, the Spectrum store, the next business day. And the guy, and I mentioned this, I said, I have one question. Is Spectrum, AT&T, and DirecTV all combining? And he looked at me like, what? And in the meantime, my wife had agreed to this. I was giving a credit card and number to pay the bill monthly. And at some point, they had me on the phone, and he asked for my driver's license number so the installer could identify me. And I said, no. Well, after speaking with the person at the Spectrum store, I contacted the number that person, which was probably calling from a boiler room in India, and I canceled it, and I told them why, and, lo and behold, they never told the installer, so this poor guy come driving all the way from Milwaukee, and I says, well, I'm sorry, but it's canceled.
Well,
yeah.
So there's, that actually sounds like I was beginning to think it was a scam of some sort, but it sounds like it was kind of a legitimate deal, Michelle?
Well, potentially. There seems to be some misrepresentation of the company that he's dealing with and how they moved towards the sale transaction there. And those things are regulated. Plus, if he's on Do Not Call, never should have received a solicitation to change services regardless. And then he talked about how the phone number, his own phone number, appeared on the caller ID. And that's called mirror spoofing, where it's an enticement to get you to answer because it creates confusion there. So there were all sorts of little techniques being used there that it is something that I would follow through in filing a complaint about, because we'd want to follow with the companies involved to see if they had a part, and since there was a credit card number taken. But I would watch that credit card for any suspicious activity there, because I'm not sure who really got it at the end of the day. I mean, yes, a technician was going to show, but not sure who really received the card number. And there's a lot of confusion with this one.
So Bill would have to call your 800 number or go online or what?
Either one. So you can go to our website and fill out the complaint there, and it will go directly into our system. And that is datcp.wi.gov. So our department initials, Department Agriculture Trade Consumer Protection, .wi.gov, or 1-800-422-7128, and they can mail out a complaint form to him.
Bill, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Go ahead and file a complaint. That would be, I'm certain Michelle would like to see it. Thank you. Vivian in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. In a recent home purchase, a home inspector was hired, went through the home, filed a report, and then subsequently a plumber was brought in to fix known issues, and a furnace technician. And the inspector missed a lot of things that should have been caught. To whom do we complain about him being licensed as an inspector? What are our alternatives?
Okay.
That's a great question. I think, Vivian, that so what I can tell you is we don't have jurisdiction over the licensing of home inspectors. That is not something that DADCAP does. We do believe that the proper department is DSPIS, and that's the Department of Safety and Professional Services. And Michelle is having to remind me because I call it DSPIS all the time. But yes, yeah, Safety and Professional Services, they do a significant amount of licensing, and I would direct your call to them or your inquiry to them, Vivian. Good luck with that.
So DSPIS is Department of Safety and Personal Services?
Professional
Services. So DSPS.
Mm-hmm. Yes, DSPS.
They do a majority of the professional registration or licensing of different services in the state. And I say majority because certain agencies have specific, like Department of Transportation does the sale of vehicles, so the dealers. But things like cosmetology and barbering and mm-hmm. different nursing, that would all be with that Safety and Professional Services.
So there you go, Vivian. Thank you so much. John in Luck, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thank you. I was just going to comment about a recent experience that my wife and I had. I guess my point is these people are very sophisticated. We all, or many of us, have accounts with Amazon, and I noticed here 9, 10 months ago, 6 months ago, that there was a charge coming through on one of our credit cards. And long story short, turned out to be Amazon Prime, at least that's what it came through as, saying that we had a monthly amount. And I investigated, because we don't have anything to do with Amazon Prime. And it come to find out that it's my wife's Amazon account, and somebody is charging a fee to it, and it's coming through on our credit card as Amazon Prime. So we called Amazon. They reversed it. We called the credit card company. They reversed it. When it happened a second time, they reversed a second one. And I closed that Amazon account, and everything seemed to be fine. But now here, about 6 weeks ago, I'm reviewing the checking account. My wife and I each have separate checking accounts, and this is with a different financial institution. So I see a charge in the middle of July, say July 8th, for $16.12, and then going to Amazon again, and then another charge on July 10th or thereabouts going to a local grocery chain. And these are small amounts, and we miss them. And
yeah.
So I start to search, and I find a similar pattern in August, another Amazon Prime $16.12, and the same local grocery chain a couple days later, $16.12. And this is on a debit card through the bank account. Well, as I mentioned, in the meantime, we've closed my wife's Amazon account. So what's going on here? This is an Amazon charge. She goes into the bank, and what we did as soon as we figured it out is the bank, and while she was there, canceled the debit card and said they'll put through a check on reversing those four debits to her account. And interestingly enough, the two that came from Amazon, we think from Amazon, she's going to go in and check this in the next day or so, were reversed. But the local ones, the merchant said a PIN and a physical card was used, and therefore they're not going to get reversed. And my point is that this is a credit card and a debit card in a couple different financial institutions and an online account where, you know, we've purchased stuff through Amazon, and all of this stuff looks pretty normal when you look at your checking account. And yes, we've closed the Amazon credit card account or the account that the credit card was being charged
to. Sure. Yeah, and it's quite a story that John's got here. He's closed the accounts.
It sounds like, to sum it all down, the base where the takeaway I have is I think that it may be a situation of where a card had experienced skimming, where the information off the credit card or the debit credit card was lifted somehow, or maybe through a data breach somehow, but that information was lifted and then resold and put on another card. I mean, that is what skimming is, where you go to a self-pay situation and they have a reader take that information. If there was a PIN used, they would have been able to grab that, and that would explain the grocery store situation. And that is a form of identity theft. And so it's really important to have that credit card monitoring, be always monitoring, put a freeze on your credit report so that people can't take extensions of credit if they get more than just your credit card number. But you can put those alerts on individual credit cards as well, and always be watching for the bank information.
Yeah. John, thank you so much. Bill and Racine, talking about freezing credit cards, Bill and Racine has something relating to that. Bill?
Yeah, thanks for taking a call. My question is, did the department have a step-by-step instructions on the internet for going through this credit freeze? I'm thinking of doing it. And the related question is, you know, right now I remember, well, I was a resident of Wisconsin for years and years and years, now a resident in Florida, but the credit cards are based on companies or credit unions up here in Wisconsin. Does that create a problem?
It shouldn't create a problem in terms of getting transactions or anything like that, I wouldn't think.
Whoever is issuing your credit card or your debit card is backed by that bank or that supplier who has all the arrangements and agreements and should be following all the federal laws that would be in place for that, who's ever issuing that. And as it relates to the question on how to place a security freeze on your credit report, yes, we have simple information where here are the phone numbers you call, and then we have a full-fledged fact sheet that kind of walks through the process. But each of the three credit reporting agencies has their own process. It's online. You need to contact each of them individually. It is free. It's been free for over a year now. But in order for it to really work, you do need to put the freeze on with each of the three, because you never know where the identity thief who's trying to get the credit is going to be, what lender they're going to be contacting in order to issue that credit. So you need to use all three. We've heard from some consumers that said, well, I just put it on with Experian. Get to Equifax, get to TransUnion, it's free, and put it on with each of the three. So go to our website at datcp.wi.gov, and under the publications fact sheet section, you can look up identity theft security freeze.
So at datcp.wi.gov, the place to go. Our guests today, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scams today on the Ideas Network, Larry Mueller with my two guests, consumer experts Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us. Questions for them or comments, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Susan in Madison next. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I've been getting phone calls that I don't answer, but they're actually leaving a message where they're wanting to help me with resolution of my student loan, but I've never had a student loan. So do I continue to ignore this call, or should I be interacting with them that somebody might have used my Social Security number and there is a student loan out there under my name and Social Security number?
I wouldn't talk with them. if you have that kind of worry, or would you, Laura?
No, I wouldn't. And clearly, if you don't have a student loan, it's a scam. They've probably bought a list of phone numbers, and they're just doing robocalls and trying to get folks on the line to solicit. I will use this opportunity, though, to talk about those scams, because the reason you're getting that call is that there's a mountain of student loan debt out there. And anytime you see that kind of debt and that number of vulnerable people, you're going to see a lot of scams. It's really difficult for folks to pay their loans back. It can get complicated to understand what your options are. And again, another ripe place for scammers to get a foothold and try to take advantage of you. So one of the common scams in student loans is to tell someone that they can help you consolidate for a fee, or they can help you get into a repayment plan for a fee. All of those services are free from the federal government, so you don't have to pay for them. That isn't to say you can't pay for them, but they do offer free information at DOE, the Department of Education, about how to pay your student loans back. So we really discourage people from jumping on opportunities to pay someone to get student loan relief. But Susan, if you're concerned about whether or not you have a loan improperly in your name, I wouldn't engage with the person that's calling you. You can do a couple of things. You can report that phone number to the department. We like it when folks file a complaint about robocalls. That way we can track those calls and report them to the federal government, who does track scam phone numbers. And in addition, if you're concerned, you should be sure to get your credit report to see if there's any unusual activity, if there is a loan being taken out on your line of credit, and determine that yourself. But by no means should you engage with the caller. They have improper information and probably are not going to lead you down the right path.
Yeah. Susan, thank you so much. Give a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Maura in Walworth up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, and thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I was just doing a quick search to see if the department has a consumer education program on all of these topics that can seem kind of overwhelming, you know, the data, your personal information. Is there anything, does the department have any kind of a on-the-ground consumer protection education going?
Yes, it does, I believe. Who wants to talk about it first?
I'll go, and then Michelle will fill me in.
Laura will go first.
I'll go first because, Larry, this is near and dear to my heart, the outreach that our team does, and they do a really nice job of consumer outreach, because Maura's right, the best way to address all of these scams, well, not the best way, but one of the best ways, is to protect yourself and be informed about what they look like. So we do have staff that go all over the state and do presentations on identity theft, landlord-tenant, any form of imposter scams, all types of scams. And so though our guys are out in the field every week, multiple 4 or 5 times a week, we can also do presentations for you if you solicit that. So you can contact our department and request information from us or request a presentation. We'd be happy to do it. We do it at schools. We do it at retirement homes and all kinds of locations, community centers. And then, of course, we have an inordinate amount of information on our website that you can download for personal use. We have a senior guide that covers a lot of the information that we talk about on these shows. We have hundreds of fact sheets, we call them, but they are single or two-page sheets on each one of these scams, what they look like, and how you can protect yourself. And we encourage people to download them and use them themselves.
So the only thing I have left to add is call 1-800-422-7128 in order to just make a request through our hotline for what it is you're looking for. And we can make arrangements to come out and do that education.
Or if you just would like to get some fact sheets, just you can just go online if you have access to a computer, datcp.wi.gov.
And if you don't have access, call the hotline. We'll send them out gladly.
Yeah, and that once you get to the datcp.wi.gov, where do you go from there?
So
is it easy to see?
It's pretty easy. I think it's the third prong over drop-down menu, but it's like consumer information, and then you'll see fact sheets. And so just click on that, and they're sorted by subject category.
There we go. Mara, thank you very much for calling. Barb in Madison, your turn.
Hello.
Hi, Barb. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I had kind of an unusual call not too long ago, and I'm not sure exactly what they were looking for. But I'd had a doctor's appointment a couple weeks before, and I got this call that said, this is the pain management center. And my first thought was, what did I forget? Did I miss an appointment? You know, did I forget something that I talked to my doctor about? And I kept saying, who is this? And they kept repeating pain management center. And I was waiting for them to say UW Hospital or Meritor or something like that. And finally, the guy got a little frustrated, and he goes, don't you have aches and pains once in a while? And I said, only from phone calls like this, and I hung up. I have no idea what they were looking for or if they wanted me to sign up for something. But
Is that one that thanks, Barb. Yeah. Is that one that you've...
Yes. I won't even let you finish your sentence, Larry. Yes. So I hope Barb is on our Do Not Call list, and then I would hope that she would file a complaint in regards to the call that she received. But this is something we've heard from consumers about, and we are trying to look into this matter because it's a bit of a twist and turn, but to, you know, really supply kind of medical devices to consumers through this name. And it might be... maybe it's associated with her appointment, and it might just be coincidence
pure
on
bad
the timing exactly as to when that call was received. So if Barb has any additional information as to the phone number that it came from or anything that was recorded or date and time, but it'd be great if she could file a complaint on our website, if that's easy, 24/7, datcp.wi.gov.
Actually, I had a colleague, former colleague, who had been to the bank about a loan and then got back to her office, and here's an email wanting more information about your loan, and it was just bad luck.
Yeah.
That email, the timing of it was perfect. She didn't think anything of it, and that resulted in a big mess.
Those things look so suspicious, and you think, oh, yeah, we must have forgotten, because so much communication happens by email now, and it's quick, easy, non-intrusive in some ways. And so you just respond because you had just done that in right to phishing, and leads to pure bad luck, probably a lot of info. It's the best way to get you caught off guard.
Yeah, it was like the timing was almost perfect. And I guess if you send out a million or a few million emails, you're going to find those people where the timing does come out to be perfect, and people get scammed. Jake in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I work for a financial institution where we sell financial products and we run one's credit. I guess I have a two-part question. So I've been led to believe that it is actually illegal to run somebody's credit without their express permission. Do we know if that's true, or is that just my company policy being severe?
The answer is I'm not entirely sure, and I think it's good that your company is taking that position. Certainly, we often require companies to notify that they're doing a credit check before in other words, when I was practicing as a consumer protection attorney, that was a common injunctive term that we would ask companies to notify the consumer that they were soliciting their information to do a credit check so they could determine whether or not you wanted them to do that. But I can certainly find that information out for you.
Yeah, we can check that out and maybe come back to that. I assume if you're filling out forms and so forth, somewhere on the form it may say, when you sign this, you're agreeing to a
Right. I mean, there are plenty of consents for background checks along the way. I'm just not sure of the reverse.
We'll check it out and we'll see what's up there. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Liz emailed to ideas@WPR.org to ask if anything is being done to prosecute these criminals or to protect innocent consumers. Are false websites ever shut down or blocked when they're found? What is the DOJ, the Department of Justice, or your department doing in this area, Michelle?
Well, that is a great question, and we work with our local, state, federal partners regularly on our investigations that we conduct, and we do every year have 100-plus investigations actively moving, and you will see if you follow the Federal Trade Commission blog that they are regularly cracking down on things that are happening nationally, internationally, impacting us across the borders. And so, yes, there are those prosecutions happening.
Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland are guests today. Michelle Reinen is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Laura Sutherland is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the department. Great to have them with us. They'll be along after we take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be able to answer more of your consumer questions. So you stay with us. We'll be back after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at consumer issues today with our two experts from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, back with us again to talk about all those scams that are out there. They'd love to be out of a job, to be perfectly honest. They'd like to get involved in something else. But unfortunately, there are too many crooks out there, and we need them. We need their support. Laura, I know that we had a question about credit checks. Is it required by something about requirements by law for an institution to let the person know that they're running a credit check on them?
That's right, Larry. I'm glad you brought that back up. The question was, do you have to give permission prior to the credit check being run? And the simple answer is no. But under the Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act, you have to have a legitimate need to request a credit report. So, and not everyone has to have your permission prior to, but you do have to have a legitimate need. So that's circling back to what we've said, like broken records. You can check your credit report to see whether or not someone has run a credit check on you. That's a good way to determine that. It says who's asked access your credit report, and you can follow up that way.
There's an advisory committee. Michelle, maybe you can start talking a little bit about that. We want to get some of our listeners perhaps involved in this.
Yeah, that's the part I'm going to cover, and I'm going to turn the details over to Laura. But the department has started a data privacy and security advisory committee. And what's important takeaway for your listeners now is that we will be moving this committee around the state over the next months, and we are going to be having an open comment period during each meeting.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be traveling to Green Bay, West Bend, Wausau, Eau Claire, Platteville, Milwaukee, and have a session here in Madison as well. So we want to be sure everyone is aware to be watching our website because the meetings will be pre-posted. And if you want to comment on the subject area of data privacy and security, this is a great opportunity. But the details behind the committee,
Laura,
I'm going to let Laura run with.
Right. I'm glad you brought it up. So we are very excited about this committee. And part of the reason that the committee is being launched under the leadership of Governor Evers and Secretary Designee Brad Pfaff is that there is an inordinate amount of data and that is being stored, bought, sold, transferred. And that needs to be private and secure. And what we'd like to do with this committee is look and see what kind of regulatory framework Wisconsin has to keep our data private, secure, and when it's not, when there is a breach, how companies are responding to that breach by notifying people to make sure they know. So basically looking at what our laws already do and whether or not they're commensurate with the laws around the states and what more can and cannot be done in the state of Wisconsin to keep our data safe and secure. So this is going to be a committee that's formed of governmental officials, consumer advocacy groups, as well as industry experts to talk about what's the legal framework right now and the industry readiness to respond to the modern day threats that we talk about every day or every day at DADCAP and certainly regularly here on this show.
And so those are coming up in the next month or two, or what?
It will be one meeting a month. And so our kickoff meeting is October 22nd. And that one is very short. So we're just getting established as a committee. So no. But then November 12 will be in Green Bay, December 10, Madison, January 28th will be Milwaukee. And then we'll be February, March, April. We'll move through West Bend, Wausau, Eau Claire area, or Platteville. But I don't have those dates in my brain.
But you'll have those on the it'll all
every
be on
meeting
the website.
Will always be noticed,
and hopefully get some other information out to the locales involved for sure. I'm sure of that.
That's right. And we also will have a email address. So if you can't make one of the meetings live, you can certainly email your comments to DADCAP and we can incorporate those in our information.
Patricia in Shawano has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was talking to my mom on her cell phone and her landline rang. And apparently she's been getting these phone calls that a number shows up on her caller ID, but it's not an actual person. It is the fast, busy, off-the-hook signal, and it goes from 2 to 5 minutes each time. And she gets about 15 of these calls a day, which ties up her phone, her landline phone. So do I need to, in order to file a complaint with the robocalls, do I need to file a complaint for every single phone number that she, because they're all random phone numbers.
Yeah, we always want to track the different phone numbers. But first, I want to ask if you've contacted your provider in regards to this. The robocalls hook, and you would have that, but they usually don't stay connected for that long. Once she disconnects, their system would want to disconnect so they can call another line again.
Right.
So I'd want to just be sure that you are also making sure that there isn't a technological problem that maybe your provider needs to look at.
Okay.
But certainly file a complaint with us as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like there's some little glitch in there. Because the scammers even wouldn't want that to happen.
Right, right. Yeah. If their system isn't hooking into the call and she's disconnecting, that something's not ending that call.
Yep. There you go, Patricia. Thank you. Cheryl in Cottage Grove. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Laura. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
My question goes to credit unions. I went in to set up a trust account because I'm doing some planning for the future when I'm not here. And while I was there, I asked, I posed inquiry regarding their interest rates on home equity loans. Just had a nice conversation with the loan officer. And she said, well, how's your credit rating? And I said, well, I'm pretty sure it's pretty good. And I said, well, let me think about everything you've said today. I'm just here to set up the trust. Left the office, and then she followed up with an email and a phone call and said, you want to pursue this loan thing? I didn't respond. And then I got a letter probably about, I don't know, 30 days later maybe a little longer than that, that said, your loan request has been denied. You've been denied a loan. And we talked about only like a $20,000 loan. And so I was like, I'm getting close to retirement. There's something horribly wrong here, and I don't like getting a denial. So I called them and sat down with the manager over the loan officer and the loan officer. And they said, well, they learned something in this process. They learned that I received the letter because the fact that they started on the computer an interest in a loan, they throw me into a pile that I made a loan request. Even though I supplied no financial information whatsoever. And the denial said I had failed to provide
financial information.
But I had not provided financial information because I wasn't sure I wanted the loan. And I said, I don't like getting this denial. How does this affect my credit score? And they said, oh, no, it won't affect your credit score. And I literally said, well, do I take this to the banking commissioner? Or do I come to consumer protection? And that's my question today. I'd really like to complain about this because I thought it was a horrible process, something that even the loan officer who was talking to me didn't realize this is what happened to all the people she talked to.
Yeah, well, that's a new one we haven't heard before. Laura?
Yeah, Cheryl, thanks for your call. And that does sound discouraging. And I, you know, frankly, I don't know that I would trust an organization saying that this isn't going to affect your credit if they ran a credit report without your information and did what you described they did. So certainly the Fair Credit Reporting Act allows you to file to contest or dispute errors on your credit report. And I would certainly look and check your credit report. Don't take their word for it, but make sure there's nothing wrong with your credit report. And then I would encourage you to file a complaint with the Department of Financial Institutions. They are the department that has jurisdiction over credit reporting and things that you're describing, and certainly financial institutions. And so I would file a complaint with them and look into, have them look into it further. But certainly check your credit report. Don't take for granted that there's nothing wrong with it.
There you go, Cheryl. Thank you so much. Al in Porterfield, your turn. Hi, Al.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got like a couple questions. One is, how often should you check your credit scores, and how safe is it to give out your Social Security number over the internet, like two credit check in places?
Yeah.
So we don't really get into the financial advisory aspect of, you know, knowing your financial security related to this credit score. We get into monitoring your credit report as it relates to identity theft, which then can have an impact on your score and services. So we advise to check your credit report 3 times a year because there are 3 major credit reporting agencies. And so you can space it out every 4 months, check with one of them. You're entitled to a free report from each of those once a year. So, you know, space it out January and April and then September and just keep them on the same cycle. If you can't manage that kind of regularity, pick your birthday, pick a holiday, and make sure once a year you are just at least monitoring your credit report to be sure there is no suspicious activity, no extensions of credit you didn't actually take out yourself. But putting a security freeze on will really minimize that. It will lock it down so people can't have that activity. And then as it relates to safety with your Social Security number, that's going to entirely depend on the security of your system and your computer, your device, your Wi-Fi, when you've last run security checks and updates and virus scans there, how secure your Wi-Fi is, if that's locked down, and then the site and whom you are now giving that information to. Are you on the right site? How are they using the information? information? How are they storing it, securing it? So I can't give that really a rating of security,
yeah.
But you really need to know who you're doing business with and that you are doing that business securely.
There you go, Al. Thank you for calling. Mike in Rice Lake, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Larry. And yeah, you're welcome. I recently purchased a car. I went through a dealer, but they did the loan through UW Credit. That's not the problem. I got the loan. Everything's great. It's paid on time every month. But one thing, when I checked my credit report, the only negative it shows is inquiries for credit. And it said I've had, you know, an unusually high number. There were 8 inquiries on the same date I bought the car. And they're showing that as a negative. Well, of course, they went to all these different outlets for credit to see get the best rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
In that, it shows up as a negative on my credit report. There were too many inquiries for credit. And it's like, well, yeah, because I bought this car. And I'm just wondering, is that something that can be addressed or is that just wait, you know, because I can check my credit anytime through my credit card and so there's no cost and it says it won't affect. This doesn't count as an inquiry. It's in-house kind of thing.
Yeah.
And same thing through UW Credit. I can check my credit there with no cost and
yep.
and that. But these 8 inquiries, essentially for the same loan.
Yeah,
but,
it doesn't make a lot of, it doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense.
Right. So that becomes a situation of a consumer and how they choose to shop for the vehicle. If they're going to let the dealer try and find them the best deal and then they just put out a blanket, hey, who's got what rate? Here's my candidate versus you going to your bank or you shopping around but not submitting that request yet. You don't submit all that financial. You just check rates and go, this is who I'm going to go after. That will lessen the pings or the checks against that credit report. So it's a matter of how you choose to shop for that loan and how that operates. But that should also, again, we're not the financial advisor people in any way, but that should also dissipate itself because it was a single incident and they're probably isn't a lot of loan activity there.
And thanks a lot for calling. And we had just kind of winding things up a little bit. Medicare open enrollment period. There's always opportunities for scams in that.
Absolutely. We want to just make sure everyone's aware that starting October 15th and runs through December 7th. So we anticipate seeing a heightened activity of scams circulating, trying to really manipulate consumers' decision-making opportunity here. So Medicare will not be making these phone calls. They do not have salespeople that will be knocking on the door or representatives threatening you that you must get this plan or these services will be cut off. So there are optional choices there with the Part D. You will not lose coverage if you don't take those voluntary choices. This is your opportunity to shop if you want. So just report schemes that you find to 1-800-Medicare. That's 1-800-Medicare, 1-800-633-4223, or call Consumer Protection as well at 1-800-422-7128.
Always a pleasure, Michelle and Laura. I look forward to your next visit. They will be back on December 5th to talk with us again. Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Laura Sutherland, Administrator of the Division of Consumer Protection, both within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. You know, we have many fun things going on in this state, and we try to support that with a new monthly segment where we feature some great places and events to explore throughout Wisconsin. This time of year is prime muskie fishing season, and here's something worth checking out.
The muskie is Wisconsin's state fish, and is it any wonder? These elusive swimmers are difficult to catch, so much so they are known as the fish of 10,000 casts. And if you do manage to snag one of these giants, as Larry Mueller says, it's an adrenaline rush. This is a great time of year to be fishing for muskies. Some of the biggest ones are caught in the fall. We'll tell you about a few upcoming muskie events, but one in particular caught our eye. It's the Ladies Muskie Fishing School at the Deerfoot Lodge and Resort in Hayward. We talked with Amanda Wilson about it. So, Amanda, you're in your third year of this event now. How did it get started?
So the Ladies Muskie Fishing School that we host here at Deerfoot Lodge on the Chippewa Flowage, it was actually inspired by a muskie tournament win. My friend Kristen Elmer and I, we've been fishing a muskie tournament that's put on by the Lake Chippewa Flowage Resort Association here. And in 2017, I caught a 50.5-inch muskie that
took
first place.
That's a big fish.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how I lifted it, but I think adrenaline plays a part in that.
Yeah, that helps. That helps.
And the president and founder of Wisconsin Women Fish, she said, you know, there's no muskie fishing school just for women. She's like, you should start that. So.
And why was it so important for it to be all women?
Yeah, that's a great question, because all of us, I'm sure, have men who have helped us, taught us, certainly inspired us. But there's something just a little bit different about an event that is completely women teaching other women. There's just a different sense of camaraderie and connection, I feel like, when it's an all-woman event.
Sure. And are the ladies who attend all experienced fishers or all levels?
All levels, yeah. We actually encourage people who have never fished for muskie before, all the way to licensed captains and women who've been, you know, fishing muskie for decades.
Okay. And so what kind of things are the people who attend going to learn?
We have a great mix of both classroom sessions and then hands-on activities. So in the classroom, we've got sessions on just muskie fishing basics, what gear do you need, how do you throw a bait caster, knot tying. And then for the hands-on sessions, we actually have northern pike handling. So a fish that's a similar shape to a muskie. Women can actually pick it up and see what it feels like to handle that type of a fish before they're out in the boat, maybe catching a muskie for the first time. And quite a few hours that are dedicated to fishing time, so both from the docks or out on the boats with those other captains that I mentioned.
Now, there must be a social aspect to this event, too.
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, there's opportunities at our bar and grill here. We host the event out of our bar and grill at Deerfoot Lodge, so certainly plenty of opportunities to connect and mingle with other participants.
Okay, I think we've got everybody's attention. Why don't you tell us when it's going to be and how you can sign up?
Absolutely. So it is coming up the weekend of October 18th through the 20th, and anyone interested in signing up, we do still have spaces open. They can visit facebook.com/Deerfoot Lodge Resort, or they can email me at AmandaWilson@DeerfootLodge.com.
Okay, and what about a phone number for those who don't have the internet?
Sure. They can call Deerfoot at 715-462-3328.
Wonderful. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for spending a little time with us and telling us about your event. We'd love to see some pictures.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hope that there are giant muskies in all of them.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amanda, and good luck.
Thank you.
And as we said earlier, this is a good time for muskie fishing, and there are a few events you may want to check out. On October 5th and 6th, the Greater Wisconsin Muskie Tournament will take place in St. Germain area. The annual Midwest Muskie Classic starts October 4th and goes through the 6th in the Phelps Area Lakes region. That's just a very few of the many events taking place around the state in the next few weeks. If you have an event you'd like to tell us about, email us at timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org and find links to the events we talked about today at wpr.org/timeout. I'm Jill Nadeau. Until next month, get out and explore, dream, and discover.
Thanks, Jill. One of the best muskie fishing partners I ever had for muskie fishing was a woman named Irene. She would fish even in the worst fall weather conditions, and she was really good at it. Well, do you have an event you'd like to suggest for our Time Out Wisconsin segment? Send us an email to timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org, and we'll have more for you next month. In the meantime, enjoy your time in the out of doors, and thank you for listening and stay with us. Lots more in store.